Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us on the line Michael Tesarian, and we're going to be talking, well, we're going to be talking about a conspiracy. Is there a conspiracy in the world today? Well, there's going to be a conference held in Santa Clara here in California on May 24th and May 25th. That's Memorial Day weekend, two-day conference. There are going to be a lot of speakers there, and Michael Tesarian has been asked to come and express his opinions, which may very well differ somewhat with my opinions, but I want you to have an opportunity this evening to hear what he has to say. Michael, are you there?
On the show.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much. So why don't you sort of, I've been up in your website and read some of your material, but I'd like you to tell our listeners who you are and, of course, where you're coming from.
Well, Stan, in the context of what you've been talking with, the Brian Hall presents his Conspiracy Con on Memorial Day, May. I've been invited to do one of the many presentations that I do. I am from Ireland, myself, Belfast, where my studies into occult researches and secret government and a lot of other fascinating subjects began. Now I'm in America. I teach the subject all over the world. I'm the author of a book on Atlantis called Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation, which I have spoken on. And but Brian invited me specifically to talk at ConspiracyCon on another subject that I teach, which is the subversive use of sacred symbolism in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I are very interested in this because it's a work that actually was made very popular or initially brought to light by the great scholar Jordan Maxwell.
All right, fine. Well, why don't we perhaps talk a little bit about that? And what you're talking about is the media uses these emblems, these signs all the time, and most people are totally unaware of them.
Yeah, you see, that's true, Stan, because, in fact, in our... in your country, here in America, there have been great scholars and writers who've written on the fact that obviously subliminal information is used. I mean, you can look on any magazine and you can look on any billboard and you can usually spot it. You know, the famous, skulls and the ice cube and all of that. And you've had Brian Wilson Keyes and Gene Kilbourne and Vance Packard even back in the 50s talking about the fact that Madison Avenue were up to something like this. And even, there's been many Christian groups that even have a slant on this. But the one thing that they all fail to understand or fail to talk about is the fact that this has also an occult agenda. It was a time when Procter & Gamble, it looked like that might suddenly surface with their symbolism. But, again, it just faded away to nothing. In fact, as Jordan Maxwell has proven, this is not just Madison Avenue trying to sell products, through the normal devices of persuasion. This is a very old story.
All right, well, let's get into the old story, because I think it's very, very strange for the average individual to understand that there have been down since the beginning of time those who were, of course, acquainted with the secret arts or the forbidden arts.
Yes.
And, of course, they always left their emblems. They would leave them in wood carvings. They would leave them in paintings and architecture. They would build something, and there would be their emblem. It would be hidden in plain sight. And today we see an emblem on the back of the dollar bill, which, of course, is an emblem of the ancient mystery religions going back 6,000 years. So what's it doing on the back of the dollar bill?
Well, actually, it goes back about 50,000 years ago, and you're absolutely right. How is it that today you can recognize anybody in uniform? How does one recognize their own church? How does the Muslim recognize the synagogue when you're passing it in the car? How do you know a sports club? How do you know that it is a hospital as opposed to a college? Symbolism. It's all over the place. Numbers, symbols, colors, mantras, rhythms. in music for thousands of years coming out of the Middle East. And you know, maybe your listeners are aware of it, I don't know, that the actual place where this was really codified about 3,000 to 5,000 years ago happened to be a place called Media, only it was spelled M-E-D-E-A. So if you go to the old atlases or the old encyclopedias and do your homework, you'll find that there was actually a place in the Middle East, not far from Libya, not far from Egypt, in fact, called Media. And you know what the Medians were? The Medians were the guys that the kings would employ to put the spell on everybody else. If there was some enemy that you just couldn't get rid of, and you didn't know how to do it because they were too strong, then you called representatives of the Medians, the Media people, to come and put the hex on them, because the Medes were the great sorcerers of old. They were the ones who'd take care of your problem. And so today we have very much the same situation going on in Hollywood. We have the same situation going on all over the world. And that's something that, of course, the average person is not going to know about. Well, why not? Why? Because the media make sure that you don't. And because they are programming your brain, as Jordan Maxwell has many times said, like a computer. They're literally programming your brain like a computer. But when you do your homework and you find out where the names come from, when the symbols come from, I personally think, I started this study when I was 13, so I can't get off of it, because I actually think it's one of the most interesting things, that how come 70% of the products that we buy, I mean, just check it, just go to the fridge, or the car in your driveway. What do the words mean? Nissan, Lexus, Mazda, Rexall. Look at all the symbolism and look at all the names. How come 78% of the products you buy have names that don't mean anything in English? Now, wait a minute. I thought if you were a merchant, your idea was to get your product sold the easiest way. Then why pick a name that doesn't mean anything in English? But it does mean something in one of the ancient languages, Latin, Greek, Hebrew, and even more ancient languages, or there are magical languages that most people don't know about that have a very deep effect on the mind. Certain letters that have an effect on the mind. How many people know that Madison Avenue, these advertising agencies, have on their staff sometimes in excess of 100 paid psychologists, top-level psychologists? They have their own paid psychologists that work only for them, but they have an excess of 50 to 100 on-call. So when they make a single few-minute advertisement, hundreds of these people sit in lecture theaters and watch it and critique every single, you know, frame about the colors, the positions, the way the people are standing. And a lot of these people in their life go and draw on occultism. In the end, in order to work in this field, you're automatically drawn into the world of talismans and amulets and power symbols, and that is what's being used on cars and products, on billboards and logos, on t-shirts and everywhere. It's on the data space, and it's on your dollar bill. So absolutely, when you say, what are these symbols doing on there? I know that Jordan Maxwell is going to do one fantastic talk on this, you know, at ConspiracyCon, and my work in the talk that I'll be doing, which is on subversive use of sacred symbolism, draws very heavily on his influence. I would almost say entirely. I had my own interest in it, but boy oh boy, I couldn't put the pieces together until I came across his work. Because I, like the average person, could not understand how come this thing that has to do with the art world, you know, an advertising world, what on earth has this got to do with my other interest, the occult world?
Well, of course, you know, it's very interesting. One of the greatest books on this subject, and I, great because it was very informative. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I believe that it is a key for anybody who really wants to understand what's going on. And that's The Secret Teachings of All Ages, written by Manly Palmer Hall. Do you know the book?
I have had that book. It was actually given to me when I was, I think, 13. And that book has stayed with me, and Mr. Hall's teachings are something I'm very close to. I would recommend that that is a compulsory book for every student of religion, whether it's orthodox or unorthodox, whether it is, you know, occult or not, symbolism, artists. That book is probably one of the greatest books that has ever come out of this whole millennium.
And, of course, what it does, it explains for people how this all fits together and how all of these various movements fit together. And, of course, it's this idea of the use of symbols hidden so that the average individual could never see them because they were hidden in plain sight. And unless you know what to look for, For instance, over the symbolism of the world, emblem of the World Future Society, was a circle made up of three sixes. Now, three sixes has a tremendous meaning both to the Christian and to the people who delve into the occult. They understand the significance. The average individual would look at that circle made up of three sixes or the emblem of the Trilateral Commission, which, of course, really controls our government. It was created by David Rockefeller, or the emblem of the New Age movement, the Aquarian Conspiracy, as Marilyn Ferguson talks about it. People would look at these things, and unless you understood their significance, you wouldn't see them at all. It was very interesting after I began talking on radio about the significance of the emblem of the World Future Society, and there are people there like Maurice Strong, a multi-billionaire, Robert McNamara, you remember him?
He's
the one who sent our boys to fight and bleed and suffer and die in Vietnam, but never to be allowed to win, just to suffer and die.
Exactly.
And of course, Barbara Marks Hubbard, who is deeply involved in this whole movement.
All the Fabians.
Right. And of course, what is so significant is that once we started talking about it, suddenly it disappears. They come up with a new logo. Now, I don't flatter myself to think that maybe they put that much credence in what we are saying, but they certainly, when people begin to understand what they're doing, then they shift gears. The last thing they want is for the average American to understand the deceit and deception. And, of course, as Michael points out so well, the mental manipulation, the control of the mind of literally millions of Americans.
Well, I'm going to be going into this subject in a thorough way. I've done videos on it. And after people come out of my talk, I can guarantee you that they're going to be thoroughly educated in every nuance of these symbols. And so their drive down the boulevard from that day onwards is not going to be the same. I've already taught this, and I've seen the impact. I've seen the impact on teaching children this, because I taught for 2 years at the New Age Academy in Berkeley to indigo children. And I used this methodology of teaching them. I didn't tell them the TV was bad. I told them it's what's coming across the TV is bad, and I'll use the same medium, and I will enlighten you. I will show you how these symbols are worked so that you are defended against it, so that you are not completely bamboozled and completely, you know, drugged out by this. And I saw it happen. I saw 25 kids, and then the next year we have more. I saw the effect just with that microcosmic group of what happens when you turn people on to symbol literacy, what I call symbol literacy. The whole Western world is suffering from symbol illiteracy, as Joseph Campbell and many others pointed out. And my work is to teach symbol literacy, but how to do it is to strike at the worst form of poison first. You must have heard we all know about the zombie, right, and in Haiti, and the old story about the zombie's a normal guy, but actually they drop this poison into his food, you know. It's called the Datura plant. It's actually poison from the Datura plant. If you drink it, then you kind of become zombified, and then you'll wake up the next day normal again, unless they keep administering every day the same little, potion for you of Datura. Well, we get the same problem today. We get it from TV. We get it from the media. It's no less poisonous. So I always insist that the witch doctors, the sorcerers, the spell makers of old are still busy. They are still busy in our societies. They hold extremely elite positions. They have thoroughly studied you. Thoroughly. They have studied your mind. They have studied your body. They have studied your sexual drives. They have studied your libido. They have studied your gender through and through, because that's all they do every day. And now it is time for us to study them. You fight Big Brother with Little Brother.
Well, now, when will you be speaking on the conspiracy?
I think I'll be there both days, you know, hanging out with everyone. But
I will be as well, but I just wondered, because I want to hear your talk very much.
Yes, please,
I'm going to be. I think I'm going to be speaking on Saturday. I think I'm at 10 o'clock. I hope I'm not at 8 o'clock, because nobody will be there at that time, but probably at 10 o'clock. And so, and I think it's going to be a fascinating conference, people coming from all points of the compass, and yet, of course, all very aware of the fact that we are not getting the truth, that the media is controlled, and that the minds of the American people have been so numbed that most of them can't understand. We have entered World War III. There will be, ultimately, attacks on America, and I fear that we will soon see many of our cities looking exactly as Baghdad does today. But then what would you anticipate? Because men and women become accomplices to the evils they don't oppose. They fail to oppose.
When Martin Luther King, he said it, when the day we die, the day that society crumbles is when we cease to stand up for what is right. I mean, you know, there's an old quote from the writer Vernon Howard who said, "The man who does not know what it means to be under psychic hypnosis is probably already under it." And I've been picking up information from the grapevine that this conspiracy con is going to have a lot more attendees because people are sick and tired. They absolutely do know. I just meet it. I've heard more people this year tell me about conspiracy con that they're going than I've ever heard in the last 2 years that it's been on. And I'm very happy to hear that because I know and I'm feeling that people are sick and tired. We have top senators. We have top police chiefs saying, reading these Patriot Acts and going, has our federal government gone insane? Now, this isn't just the rank and file who are saying this. This is very senior members of government, senior members of education, and even police chiefs, federal police chiefs, I mean, not federal, but the normal employee of the state are going, what on earth is coming down here? Well, what's coming down here is the New World Order. And if you just study the terms New World, that will be explained in my book, Atlantis. Why would they even use the term New World? Because it implies that there's an old world before. There was an old world disorder, so now there has to be a New World Order. These symbols that you find on the dollar bill are alone the most fascinating subject, and we will be doing a thorough introduction into this, approaching conspiracy subjects, but from a different angle, because, you know, part of my issue, you know, is that a lot of people who are the wonderful scholars in the work of conspiracy, however, it sometimes tends to be a little dry, a little bit problem-orientated, right, where the problems are continually restated. I have to stress that my particular approach to this whole subject is basically my approach to all the other work that I do. It is solution orientation. I mean, my God, don't we already know what the problems are? I mean, you know, don't we know?
No, I think there are an awful lot of people who don't even know there's a problem.
Well,
and that's why we're in so much trouble today. There are a lot of people who think, didn't we have a wonderful war? It's over. We hardly lost anybody. Isn't that wonderful? And they don't understand that that was just the first shot of the war. It was the first shots. I mean, this war is going to go on and on and on. In fact,
it's never stopped.
That's right. In fact, it was 2 days after September 11th when the Prime Minister of, and we have this incidentally on a video, it's called The Great Deception, and you'll hear the Prime Minister of Canada saying, this war will never end. And of course, Donald Rumsfeld, 2 days after the attack, was talking to a group of reporters and said, you know, this is going to be a long war, more or less like the Cold War, and that lasted for 50 years. And the president, 4 days after the attack, on his radio program, said, you know, you'll be asked for your patience, this conflict will not be short. You'll be asked for your resolve, for the conflict will not be easy. You'll be asked for your strength, for the road to victory may be long. And they anticipate that this battle will last far beyond any of our lives. And of course, we're being told, well, you've got to give up a little freedom because we're involved in this war against terrorism. But we're really not involved in the war against terrorism. It's all perception. And as I pointed out so often to our listeners, you know, you go to the airport now and they say to you, well, you know, if you're wearing any shoes other than tennis shoes, you have to take them off. Now, why is that? Well, supposedly you might have some explosives in your shoes. The only trouble is everybody's forgotten that John Reed, the mad shoe bomber, was wearing tennis shoes. So why is it all right to wear tennis shoes and not regular shoes through the gates there? And of course, the real crux of the whole thing is, as we mentioned this before, here's poor old John Reed. He's told to get on the plane, to light the fuses into his shoes. He's going to blow up the plane with the explosives in his shoes. Now, anybody who's worked with C4 knows you can't set it off with a fuse. You have to have blasting caps. You can actually burn C4 all you want to, get a fine source of heat, but it doesn't explode without blasting caps. They knew that when they gave him the shoes, and poor John Reed's going to spend the rest of his life in prison because he was the mad shoe bomber. Of course, he was trying to explode something, and without blasting caps, it wouldn't have worked. Our government knows that, but they figure the American people are too dumb to know that. There's certainly the people, I'm sure, who built those shoes knew if they worked with C4 that you couldn't set it off that way. But it's all a matter of perception. You have to give the American people the idea we're in a battle with terrorists. And yet, these terrible terrorists, since the anthrax attack right after the September 11th attack, there have been no major terrorist attacks in America. Why not? Because this whole thing is totally controlled.
But there may be more. You see,
No, there may be at a later time, but they'll be there because that is what they need at that time to justify more control. We'll be back here in just a moment. All right, fine. This is Dr. Stan, our guest, Michael Tesarian. And I think that there are going to be terrible things that are going to happen here in the future. I think we're doing everything we can to inflame the Muslims throughout the world. We're leaving our borders open intentionally so they can get into this country. And many of them, out of just total frustration, will do what some of the foolish people did from Syria. I mean, they grabbed rifles, they ran across the border and into Iraq to fight, and protect the land of the Muslims, and they were gunned down. Some of them were paraplegic. They were just like sheep led to the slaughter. They thought they were going to somehow be able to stand and fight for their country. Whereas, of course, the whole invasion, how could it be that Donald Rumsfeld knew what none of his generals knew? And all the generals said, you're going to have another 100,000 men. And Rumsfeld said, no, we're not going to. This is going to work. And they said, it can't work. And they said, trust me. What did he know they didn't? He knew that they weren't going to blow up the bridges. He knew that they weren't going to mine the roads. He knew that they weren't going to use surface-to-air missiles on our helicopters. He knew that they weren't going to use anti-tank weapons, that they weren't going to use any of their airplanes. They had 100 airplanes. Not one of them ever went in the air. What were they saving them for? I mean, after all, if they're going to be destroyed, you'd expect their planes would go down fighting. None of the planes were in the air. And we could go down the line. So many of the units there were ordered not to fight, simply to lay down their weapons, take off their uniforms, and go home. And, of course, many of the Iraqis ready to fight to the death for what they believed in, and they believed they were defending their homeland, were just told to go home. So, obviously, this whole thing was slam dunk ahead of time, and there are forces at work that most people don't understand. Where are the weapons of mass destruction? Because we were told they were there. After all, that's the reason we went in. Where is Saddam Hussein? Where is Osama bin Laden? Maybe things are not as they appear to be. Well, what's your impression, Michael?
Well, I'll be going into that on May 6th in Berkeley at the New Age Academy on Adeline Avenue on May 6th at 7 o'clock. I'll be doing a talk on 911, the Gulf Crisis, Afghanistan, and the New World Order. So people can contact me through my website or phone, and sign up for that. A slide presentation, all featuring this material.
Now, why don't you tell our listeners how they can, get hold of your website?
Well, the phone number is 650-223-3304. And my email is Neeter, that's N for Norman, E for Edward, T for Tom, E for Edward, R for Robert. Neeter, N-E-T-E-R, at jts.net. And my website, which features, a good deal of work that I do in other areas, is taroscopes.com, TAROSCOPES, taroscopes, all one word. And that's because I work with the tarot cards and with astrology, and people can browse the website, and my contact information is on there. But the phone number, again, is 650-223-3304. We are going to be appearing on March the 6th, doing 911, a whole 2-3 hour presentation on that. I'll be doing the same presentation in the Psychic Institute in Berkeley on May 31st, after Conspiracy Con, and I'm in the area for a lot of other events. And
You're sort of cutting out there. You on a regular phone?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, my website has a calendar of events page under events. If you click on the link for events, it will take you to my calendar of events page, and people can then discover all of the different gigs that I'm doing and hosting, because I'll be at the Psychic Institute. I write for their newspaper every month, and they're hosting me again, and then I'll be appearing at Shift, the Shift Group in Redwood City, and there are several other things that I'm doing other than Conspiracy Con in the coming weeks. But the first gig is going to be...
All right, for just a moment here. All right, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Michael Tesarian, and of course, he's just telling a little bit about how people can get in touch with his website and some of the talks he's going to be giving here in the upcoming weeks and months. And of course, I think it's important that people understand all sides of the issue, and I think that certainly We might disagree on some of the things, but that's what's going to be so interesting about the conspiracy conference, is you're going to have people from all gamuts, all sides, and of course then there's going to be periods where it's going to be panel discussions and questions and answers, and so you'll be able to get an overview that I think you probably will not get elsewhere, and of course this will all be videoed and those videos will be available. So anyway, we were talking a little bit about 9-1-1, then we were talking about the war, and do you want to, of course, get into your views of what 9-1 was about, and of course, what the recent war in Iraq was all about?
Well, the first thing that you mentioned is very intriguing, because these people in power are just, you know, dancing on their desks that they have another conflict. They were doing so with the Cold War, they were doing so with, you know, Gaddafi. They've been doing so with every kind of nemesis that they can possibly throw in front of the American people, or if they don't have a physical nemesis, then it'll be asteroids from outer space, or whatever, or some sort of disease that's just going to kill you because you've never heard of ozone, but now you have to go and be vaccinated. And every other kind of threat and every other kind of, you know, thing that they can put before us to scare the bejesus out of us, they'll do. But the context is this, that America opened with a war. I do astrology, I predict things. I don't want to have to predict it, that the country is going to close with a war. But the interesting thing about the War of Independence was that there was a declaration of war, meaning that when two sides are going to have a war, they send their ambassadors and they literally sign a piece of paper called a declaration of war. Now, strangely, a very strange thing happened, that after the sides came together again, you know, and the war technically stopped, guess what happened? There was no signing of another document called a declaration of peace. And the American people in general, the world, don't know these kinds of things. That in fact, if you have a declaration of war, then to close the war, you have to have a declaration of peace, and it must be signed, and it must be done legally, and it must be done correctly. If it is not done, then in fact, a state of emergency persists. So today, when you see in our world presidents being able to make these executive orders which are unconstitutional, when you have the military and the federal government doing all of these illegal things, they are actually doing it legally. They're not doing it illegally. They're doing it legally, and the only way to fight them is through legal means. And if we were able to get back, people talk about getting back to constitutional government. Well, that takes time. It has to be done in stages. The first thing that you do is you sign your Declaration of Peace, which prohibits the powers that be, like the president, from signing any executive orders, because this country then will not be under a state of emergency legally. And that is exactly why, as Jordan Maxwell has pointed out many times, the actual American flag of peace is not the flag that is flying from the flagpoles today. The flag of America that has the horizontal lines running horizontally is actually the American flag of war. And that can be proven. The American flag of peace is the one that you more correctly see on the shield of the dollar bill where the stripes are running vertically, or perhaps the one even in the Congress room at the back when it's hanging downwards. That is actually an American flag of peace. So everything else that's flying there is an American flag of war. So me, being an immigrant coming here, knowing a lot of this stuff, I go, well, of course you're going to have a war. What are you talking about? You've been under war since the War of Independence. You've been in a state of emergency. I'm from Belfast, Ireland, Stan. I grew up for 30 years under a state of martial law with literally the gun to the head. I know what might be coming down the line here because I've lived under it my whole life. I've watched people like Bobby Sands die for his cause. I don't have to believe in his cause, right? But the famous IRA hunger strikers. I think there's something to a human being who will lie in a cell and literally starve himself for 75 days, not over better food, not over press coverage to be a big star, but for a principle that is called freedom. And there are many people who have given their lives for that. That is what I am interested in. I have seen the women in my country with the babies in their arms spitting in the face of the British army saying, get out of our country. Now, what are these women protecting, Stan? Are they protecting their villas in Bel Air? No, they don't even own their own houses. They've got toilets out the back. What are they fighting for? A principle called freedom. You think the American people are weak? It took 3% of the American people to rise in the War of Independence to throw the most powerful tyrant on the earth in those days into the Atlantic Ocean and make this country under God. 3%. What was everybody else doing? Well, they were shivering under their beds like they're doing now. That's always going to be the case. So I particularly always tell my audiences, I don't want to hear anything about when are we all going to get it? When are we all going to be enlightened? When is everybody just going to, you know, get real here? Well, forget about everybody getting real. It's never that way. It's always the few hardy people who have not lost their connection to spirit, their connection to truth, and their connection to freedom. These adversaries that we fight are not many people. That's why we call them a shadow government. That's why they operate from behind the scenes. They do that because they're weak. They're vulnerable. They just have an illusion of power.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Radio Liberty Network, and of course, we're coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And our guest this afternoon is Michael Tsarian. We're talking about, of course, the talk he's going to be giving at the Conspiracy Conference, and of course, his background studying the various forces working behind the scenes in the world today. And of course, I was fascinated that you've written a book about Atlantis, because, you know, of course, most people don't understand how important the legend of Atlantis is to what's going on in the world today. They don't really understand, where the idea came from.
Right.
It came from, of course, Plato's dialogues. And, of course, Plato wrote about this wonderful utopian, far-advanced society that existed in the ancient past, and that, of course, was destroyed by, apparently, a great flood. Be that as it may, Atlantis was destroyed, and there's always been this dream of reconstituting Atlantis. Now, it was in the early 1600s that a man named Francis Bacon, who was a Rosicrucian and a practicer of the dark arts, sent a group of Rosicrucians to America. They arrived here about 1640, and their goal, their objective, was to create in America the New Atlantis. Francis Bacon had written a book called The New Atlantis in America, then was to lead this country, indeed the whole world, into this New Atlantis, into this New World Order. And that's why, of course, it was these practitioners that were able to put on the back of the Great Seal of the United States that emblem we see on the back of the dollar bill, which goes back really thousands and thousands of years in history. So why was it put on the back of the Great Seal of the United States? Why was it put on the back of the dollar bill in 1935 by Franklin Delano Roosevelt? In fact, why did Admiral Poindexter employed by the Pentagon to set up something called DARPA, the New Total Information Awareness System, and on their web page at the Pentagon, what emblem did they have? Why, they had the pyramid, capped by the all-seeing eye. And when, of course, people began pointing that out and asking what an emblem of the ancient mystery religion was doing on DARPA web page, they took it down. So what's your interpretation of what I've been saying? How would you respond to it?
Exactly. That pyramid turns up all over the place. It's on KinderCare. It's on federal investments. You find it on rock logos. You find it on so many areas. And, of course, the original is in Egypt. But many people have talked about the pyramid. And, of course, it represents a concept. It's not just a physical emblem, because if you actually look at it, the so-called capstone is actually in 2D. The pyramid is in three dimensions, but the actual capstone at the top, the missing capstone, the image that they have there is actually two-dimensional. So it represents, the transition of knowledge from a two-dimensional to a three-dimensional level. There's many, many interpretations. Specifically, it is a symbol that comes out of the Jesuit order, or more or less, people might not be familiar with that concept, so let's just use the term the Illuminati. The term the Illuminati were the people who used this symbol. It might interest you to know that the Rosicrucians, your audience at least, because, Dan, I know that you know this, that the original Rosicrucians comes from the word the Rose Cross. And Martin Luther, the man who is actually meant to have created the so-called religion that split off from Catholicism, that's Protestantism. Oh yeah, but wait a minute, no, that's another problem, reaction, solution situation going there, because Protestantism is not an antithesis at all of Catholicism. Because if you go back to the original documents that Martin Luther King wrote, I'm sorry, not Martin Luther King, but Martin Luther, back in the 1500s, you'll find on the cover of his documents are the Rose Cross, meaning that like the Illuminati leaders, he himself was employed by secret societies. So a lot of the people behind the Orthodox religions, a lot of people behind the governments, a lot of people behind the institutions of government, religion, and business work for or are literally bloodline related to the fathers the founding fathers, the dynasties of Europe, and who are the controllers of these secret societies. They are definitely operating in America. Not all of them are bad. Not all of the people who belong to secret societies are bad. We're talking about the very elite. Anyone who's done any homework in this subject knows that. We're not talking about ordinary Freemasons. We're not talking about ordinary Rosicrucians. We're talking about bloodline people, not the ones that, you know, like you and me maybe join these groups from the street level. We're talking about the bloodline people. These individuals have hidden masters themselves, and they have to then put the symbols of their masters on their work.
Now, I would very much like to get some documentation on Martin Luther having the Rose Cross of the Rosicrucians.
Just go to Worms. Just go to Wittenberg, to the museums there, and the cities from which he originally arose, and you will find that there it is. The Rose Cross and all of this information is there. Many books have been written on this. The interesting thing also is, do you really imagine that the powers of the Catholic Church at that time, who could literally annihilate entire countries? These are the people that had a 30 years war, a 100 years war, literally steamrolled all over Europe, would let a man just go up and nail a bunch, like 50 of these edicts on the door of whatever it was, a cathedral.
It was the church at Wittenberg.
Right,
cathedral
and then say,
Wittenberg.
And then basically go on to create Catholicism, to create Protestantism. I doubt it. Why would they let this one person just do what he's doing? You see, the whole point is that there is a pyramid that you're talking about. As I said, it represents concepts. It represents the idea of the thesis, antithesis, synthesis. It represents this infernal trinity, what I call the infernal trinity. David Icke calls it the problem reaction solution. No. I prefer to call it problem confusion solution.
Now, for our listeners out there, and many of our listeners will be Christian, I want them to understand that we would probably disagree on this, but I want you to hear what Michael has to say. You know what I feel.
Well,
you go right ahead, but I'm just clarifying this for the
sure.
For the audience who's going to be listening out there who might be offended by what you have to say. I'm just saying, I want you to hear what Michael has to say, because he's coming from a far different point of view than I am. On the other hand, he has a lot of fascinating information. As we begin to put this together, we can begin to get some clarity on what's going on. So go ahead.
Well, the first thing is that I have no intention of offending anyone, because the ordinary individual who is worshiping God in his own way has the perfect right to believe what he wants to believe. That's what says in the Constitution, that everyone will be protected here to believe what they want to believe from any point of religion. All I'm saying is that behind the institutions of religion, now that is a very different statement than saying what the religious credos are. The religious credos, are those beliefs that you have in your head. I'm not attacking those. The individuals that, you know, I work with, of course, are Christians, everyone. I have a great respect for that. I've studied the Bible from cover to cover and probably know more about it than the average Christian does. But the point is that there are institutions that are doing damage to the Christian people, just as there are Jewish institutions that are doing damage to the Jewish people, just like there are Muslim ones that are doing Muslim. And that is because they are not involved in religion. They're involved in secret societies that have created many, many levels of this pyramid that go on. So when David Icke calls his trinity, his particular concept is the problem, reaction, solution, based on the chaos out of order, right, the control out of chaos that has been going on since the election of this latest George Bush, because, my God, if that particular fiasco in Florida was not a perfect example of creating control from chaos, what is? I prefer to call it problem, confusion, solution. Because it's not just reaction solution, because reaction could be anything. Confusion is what they really want. So if you actually plot in history these archetypes, you'll find that in the instance I used was about Martin Luther. I'm not saying that what he then went on to create has no value. I'm not saying that you could not manufacture anything. Of course it has value. But what was the real purpose? We have to pull back from the canvas of life. You talked earlier about how people are blind, that we're not seeing things because it's hidden in plain view. That's right. Some of us are standing too close to the canvas. We're so, you know, attached to our belief systems that we cannot step back. And then some people, well, they're just too far back. They can't see any of the detail.
No.
In life, you've got to stand, you know, go to any art gallery, right? You've got to stand at a proper distance for your own eyes. And then you have the appreciation, because when you stand too close, you see a very different painting than when you do when you stand far away. And so this is what human life is all about. Distance yourself sometimes from your own belief systems. then, you know, try to maybe take on board what another person is saying to see the perspectives, because in this world, you're going to need that. You're going to need a sense of perspective, and you're going to need a very open and objective mind. And I think that this country is a university. This country and the goings-on in it are fascinating, what goes on here. But you see, we have to get away from the street-level divisions, realizing what they are. That does not mean that we have to cease, you know, our allegiances to our religion, to our God, to our family. No, in fact, all we're doing is stopping the allegiances that get in the way of our real religious duties, our real spiritual evolution. Because believe me, our spiritual evolution isn't doing very well. Our spiritual evolution, I don't care what denomination anyone's from, is pretty much in retrograde. And I will argue that point with anyone. Because under the name of religion, even in my own country, I can tell you great injustices are done. And they're being done all over the world. But right. That's not religion. That is propaganda. And that is what my focus is, pointing out the propaganda. Every single thing that I'm saying can be researched in accepted reference works.
Well, I think that the significant thing that people have to understand is that all the great religions of the world, as Michael said, have been infiltrated by these dark forces.
Absolutely
and
right.
Of course, the reason that Martin Luther attacked his edicts there, the door of the church in Wittenberg, was because of the corruption in the Catholic Church at that time. And of course, he didn't want to destroy the Catholic Church. He wanted to reform the Catholic Church.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the Catholic Church didn't want to be reformed. In fact, they had the Great Council of Trent at that time, and they sat down and they said, what are we going to do? Here's this fellow. He's challenged this. He's challenging the whole basic foundation of the Catholic Church. And of course, the Catholic Church at that time was a power structure, and it was offering indulgences. You give us so much money, and you're going to get into heaven, and you can buy other people into heaven. Give us this money, because we got to build St. Peter's Basilica,
sure.
And we want your money. You give us the money, you'll get into heaven. Well, of course, Martin Luther recognized that was wrong, and I'm sure that a lot of good Catholics realized it was wrong,
but
it was all part of this hierarchical structure. There was had an objective, and it was really, of course, raising funds and simply exploiting the people and exploiting the religion. But those same forces are still at work in the Catholic and the Protestant and, as you say, in the Jewish religion today.
There's absolutely right, Stan. That's a brilliant clarification, because there's nothing wrong with what he did by going against the Vatican, going against the bastion of power that was dehumanizing individuals. And let me make a clear point again. When I'm talking about the Vatican, I am not talking about Roman Catholicism as a religion. The Vatican is a very different or kind of organization, even legally. This can be proven than when we're talking about Roman Catholics. So this is why, you know, we don't want to rub people up the wrong way. When we're talking about these religions, we're talking about the organized structure. You were mentioning earlier on about the great scholar Manly Palmer Hall and his book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, right? Is that right?
Right, right.
Yeah, he had a quote. He said that not only were many of the founders of the United States Masons, but they received aid from a secret and august body existing in Europe, which helped them to establish the United States for a peculiar and particular purpose known only to the initiated few.
The Order of the Quest was one he referred to as one of these organizations behind what was going on. Most people have never heard of the Order of the Quest, or most people have never heard of Manly P. Hall.
That's right.
And yet, of course, I have a number of his books in my library.
Brilliant. Me too. He's a wonderful person. And you have the head of the Illuminati was Adam Weishaupt, but he was supplanted after he passed away. The mantle of the Illuminati, this is one of the ultra-secret societies that operate in the world, and they don't mind posing behind the veil of religion, because they ultimately want to corrode all religion. The point that the people who are truly religious have to understand is that the individuals who have not infiltrated these particular organizations have no interest in God whatsoever. And one of the head, the second head of the Illuminati was called Giuseppe Mazzini. People who study French history and revolutionary politics will recognize his name. He actually wrote, this is the head of the Bavarian Illuminati, he said, "We form an association of brothers in all points of the globe. Yet there is one unseen that can hardly be felt, yet it weighs on us. Where does it come from? Where is it? No one knows, or at least no one tells. This association is secret, even to the veterans of the secret societies." This is a quote from my book, that Atlantis, because in the book Atlantis I go in very much to the New World Order, and also what some of the paradigms are coming out of the ancient world, and talking about, here's the head of the Illuminati saying that they themselves are controlled by yet even another order, more secret, more dark, you know. And in my researches, that's exactly what I found. I found that this order goes back 50,000 years to a particular visitation that is mentioned in the Bible, the visitation of the Nephilim, the visitation of the fallen angels. This has been a subject that has fascinated me all my life, and I have written a book that goes into what the Celtic sagas have to say. I'm from Ireland, so I've always been interested in Arthurian tradition, Celtic tradition, the Druidic tradition. And interestingly, the Druids and the Celtic people have a very interesting archive of information. The only thing is that nobody has really studied it properly in this context, in connection to alien visitation or anything, because you know, we just assume that it's all fairy folk tales and mythology and just fables, folk tales, and even the people in my country still think that. But I re-looked at it again, and I came to the conclusion that, in fact, these records are saying very much the same as what the Mahabharata is saying in India, what the Zachariah Sitchin has unearthed over in Samaria, what the Popol Vuh of the Mayans is saying, that there was galactic war. There was fighting of races, cultures on our planet here, and that there was a place called Atlantis, and there's a place called Lemuria, and there was a genetic interference of the human race. That was the fall, the idea of the fall being not only a fall spiritually, but a fall genetically, in which there was a program of hybridization. And recent findings into cloning and into genetics are proving this now. Even scientific findings are saying there's something peculiar about the human being's DNA. And then, coming from a philosophical background myself, my interest has been philosophical. And in the book, I address this question of evil. And that is why my work has been getting a lot of attention, because I'm not totally fascinated, really, with whether or not our ancestors are coming from the Pleiades, or whether they're coming from Sirius, whether they're greens, whether they're grays, you know, or whatever. Those are interesting topics, but to me, something is much more interesting than that, and that is, how on earth did the concept of evil come into the consciousness of human beings? Because the Almighty Creator has everything in perfect balance, from the smallest molecule to the greatest neutron star. Everything around us is in perfect harmony, except nature's highest creation, man. Now, wait a minute. When you step back from the canvas and ask yourself a question, why on earth would nature or God put inside of us a proclivity so negative, so deadly, that it undermines not only our own order, our own welfare, but the welfare of the earth itself? I do not believe that God or nature put that in us. I believe that that was due to some sort of external interference, and the Celtic records prove it. The Celtic records say that is exactly what happened. There was an invasion of these beings that the Bible refers to as the Nephilim, the fallen angels, the Rephaim, the sons of Zadok. There are many names, and we go into this in the book in great, great detail. We talk about the fate of women and how this particular program of hybridization changed the genders, you know, and then came the rise of the great empires of the historical period full of blood and war. And I take it down through the centuries up to the modern Silicon Age and look at this whole thesis from another point of view.
Well, you know, of course, what you're talking about is the question that has plagued mankind going back thousands of years. Certainly, yes. The Zoroastrians looked at this, and they said there had to be two gods, you know, a good god and a bad god, light and dark god. Certainly, the Manichaeans tried to come up with an explanation for what was going on, because why would a god make evil or allow evil? Why would a loving God, if he is a loving God, want something so abhorrent as evil that we have?
You have it.
And, of course, this question has plagued mankind since the beginning of time. And long before Christ was born in Bethlehem, the Zoroastrians, who are, of course, domiciled primarily today in Iran, although they have branches throughout the world, but really Iran, ancient Persia, was the center of Zoroastrianism. And, of course, but really there is so much in history that the average American doesn't know. Once they do know, I think it will tend to increase their faith, but we just need to try to get people to think. And
I think, Stan, that people have a lot of faith. I think that my particular spiritual beliefs are very, very, very simple. Most people are very deeply loving of truth. Most people are very deeply loving of God. I think most people are very good inwardly, and that they have a desire to do the right thing. And I think that there's no need to, we don't have to force ourselves a lot of times to be, you know, wanting to do good things. I think that goes on a lot in our minds. The major problem for me is that spirituality involves not proving that we have more faith. It has to do with the fact of how do we get these impediments out of the way of our faith. I think that the ascent to God has been impeded. It is being restricted. I think we all want to do the right thing, but there are simply forces around us that prevent us from doing it. So it's not about that we need more faith, more love. No, we've already got that. I think that's an evidence everywhere. But the fact of the matter is there are impediments in the way that have been put there to sidetrack us. And of course, even within the pages of Orthodox religion, you have this, because they're going to scramble the information. They're not going to leave it for us to be very clear. So we're going to be, even when you're into the subject, even when you're trying to find connect the dots, it becomes a little tricky until you start to really stand back from the canvas and see what is really going on. And my researches were helped because I got interested in this whole concept of the Celtic legends, because it's been neglected. A lot of people have studied the Indian legends. A lot of people have studied the Sumerian legends and have some many, many questions about the origins of the Bible and the origins of religion and the origins of the great empires that have risen that obviously we're very much based on today. Half of these civic buildings of even the modern cities are based on Renaissance design and design that come, you know, from before that. I'll be talking about it at the expo when I get into the symbolism thing, but how the cities themselves are designed based on astronomical geometry, Freemasonic, you know, symbolism all over the cities, not just on products and on television. But we must ask ourselves then, what has been going on? Where are the roots? Every single parent teaches their children, try to be original. You know, everybody says, well, you know, my whole thing in life is to be original. Why don't we look at what the word means?
Well, you know, I think it's so interesting you bring that up. But we carry a book here called The Occult Architecture of Our Nation's Capital.
By David Overson?
Right. And
that's a classic.
It's a fascinating book. I mean, we've known about this for a long time, but only recently did HarperCollins actually release the book. And, of course, it's available through our ministry of The Occult Architecture of the Nation's Capital. Did you know that Washington, D.C. was laid out on astrological and Masonic symbology? And, of course, how could that be and nobody knows about it? Why, very simply, they control our reality. And there's this book really is quite authoritative. Certainly the people within the occult organizations recognize this. They figure that the average individual is just too dumb to understand what's going on. There is not a major building in Washington, D.C. today that does not have a Masonic plaque on it, of course, dating back to the ancient mystery religions. And that's where Masonry had its origin. At least most of the ceremonies there come from the ancient religions and, of course, date back to the time of the Templars and probably even long before that. But if you read their writings of certainly Albert Pike, he will tell you that modern-day Masonry is a manifestation of the Rosicrucians and certainly of the ancient mystery religions and the Gnostics and the Kabbalists. And, of course, the average Mason doesn't have any idea what it's all about because he hasn't bothered to sit down and read Morals and Dogma, which is the Bible of modern-day Masonry. But then the average Christian has never really read in great detail and studied the Word of God that he ascribes to. So there's so much out there, so much knowledge, and if we can help to perhaps crystallize this for you, then you'll begin to understand that there truly is many things working behind the scenes that the average individual has no concept of.
Well, my book is very much trying to do that because I'm fascinated that you talk about David Overson's wonderful book, because in my book I have a chapter called Serpents in the Streets, which is about these occult designs of cities, and a lot of it is abstracted from his book. That book absolutely is pivotal to the work that I do, and he went to the archives of the Library of Congress. He went to the archives of all the founding fathers, their documents, to show exactly how and why. Actually, not the why. Unfortunately, the one weak part of David Overson's book is that he doesn't really understand why this was done. He even admits that. But, you know, he, for instance, points out the word capital. When you even use the word Capitol Hill, it comes from Caput Draconis, which is the head and the tail of the dragon. So we have these people sitting in Capitol Hill who I don't think they're serving God, and if you get into the symbolism, you'll soon find out that they're not serving God, they're serving something, some other kind of power. and they may be in league with other kinds of forces that might stun a lot of people.
Well, I think if we see what's coming out of Washington, D.C. today, I don't think anybody should be surprised at that. And the great tragedy is the average individual does not even know what's going on, the legislation that's going on there, the way that they are actually spending us into oblivion and destroying the heritage of generations yet unborn.
Well, exactly. And I'm going to be putting a lot of emphasis on that on the May 6th talk, because Patriot 2 Act is out. And Patriot 1, right, the Patriot Act number 1, was eviscerated a lot of the, you know, the constitutional rights here. But Patriot Act 2 is what they really wanted to get in, and it's already being put before the senators and the congressmen, and a lot of them are not wanting to sign it. You probably have talked about this before on your show, but...
No, I haven't, but maybe we can talk about that in the next hour. And I think it's so vitally important that we bring pressure to bear on every congressman and every senator, saying if you vote for this, it'll be our last term in office.
But
I heard a member of this ruling elite speak recently, and you know, his line was just beautiful. He said, look, I mean, we're involved in a war against terrorism, and when you're in wartime, you have to give up some of your freedom, but you only give it up temporarily until the war is over, and then once you are victorious in this war, then you get your freedom back. Of course, he didn't mention their planning on this war never being over, because this is really all about taking away the freedom of the American people, and they're willing to give it up thinking somehow we're going to get security in our battle against these wicked terrorists. But nobody ever points out that Osama bin Laden, the wicked Osama bin Laden's family, is very close to George Herbert Walker
That's right.
Bush and their investments in the Carlyle Corporation.
Halliburton's group.
Right. And then, of course, Osama bin Laden was employed by the CIA, worked with the CIA
yep.
all during the 1980s. And, of course, then if you get into the who funded Al-Qaeda, well, Saudi Arabia, our good friends, friends of the Saudis. But the CIA was there as well. Who funded the Taliban? Why, the United States and Saudi Arabia funded the Taliban. Who funded Al-Qaeda after 9-1-1? Why, the Saudis did. And why haven't we done anything about it? Well, we're going to try to get to them to get them to stop doing that one of these days. You know, there's something wrong with this picture.
Well, who created Kuwait? Who created Saudi Arabia, the countries? Who put these dignitaries, so-called royal family of Saudi Arabia? Nobody even recognizes them in the area. This was after the Second World War. These artificial countries of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait were created by Lord Soames and, you know, the Zionist governments in England at the time.
You're talking about after the First World War.
After the First World War,
right.
Exactly, excuse me, and that these countries were designed all for oil, completely artificial, putting races and cultures near each other who cannot live with each other. You have the Kosovo problem, you know, just a few years ago. People don't realize that that has its roots in the ancient past. But it also has its roots in the artificial separation and division of the countries of Europe. By the winners in the war, of the First World War, artificially bringing a very antithetical groups together and forcing them to live together, knowing that there would be a powder keg situation there, where there'd be butchering and murdering, and then the forces can move in and take the land. And that's what's been going on.
And I think it's very difficult for the average individual to believe that anybody could be wicked enough to plan these things. And yet, you go back and you see what happened at that time. Who were the movers and shakers in the writing of the Versailles Treaty? Who was it who said that Germany would have to pay reparations, but never told them how long they were going to have to pay them? Why was a man named John Foster Dulles, who was the brother of Allen Dulles, who created the CIA, and those two brothers did more harm to the cause of freedom than anybody I know, and both of them were deeply involved with the dark side. Well, we're going to have to say goodbye to our listeners up there in the Great Northwest. Michael, and so we'll just bid them goodbye, and we'll have to go to the station break, and then we'll be back to you right afterwards.
Can I give my contact information?
Oh, go ahead. Give it one more quickly.
The number was 650-223-3304.
One more time.
650-223-3304. And I'm at taroscopes.com.
Okay, fine. And so please pray for America. Pray for revival in America. Pray that people will turn back to the God of the Bible. And we'll be back with you again tomorrow evening. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Let me give those numbers again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, don't be bashful. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, our guest is Michael Tesarian, and he's going to be speaking at the Conspiracy Conference on Memorial Day weekend. That's the 24th and 25th over in the Santa Clara. I guess it's the Marriott Hotel there in Santa Clara. I'm going to be speaking. Jim Mars is going to be there. It looks like a fascinating, fascinating group of people talking about the forces that are working behind the scenes. We call them conspiracies because they're groups of men who are working in secret for specific goals and purposes. And then, of course, we'll be trying to come up with conclusions, and we may agree, we may disagree, we may agree more than we disagree. But the important thing is that how should we address what's going on today? And I don't think that there's anybody who has really studied what has happened in this last 2 or 3 years, who does not realize that the attack on the World Trade Center on the morning of September 11th, 2001, was the beginning of World War III. And the many, many questions arise, and the biggest one is, why did the president and Dick Cheney and the people that surrounded them not want an independent investigation of what happened that morning? Why was George Tenet, who was head of the CIA, instead of being fired for his failure to stop the murder of 3,000 Americans, why was he told you did a fine job and kept on? Now, Robert Mueller had only been on the job for a few days with the FBI before it happened, but certainly George Tenet would be held responsible, and in any other country in the world, he would have been fired or would have resigned, but not in America. So the question is, why wasn't he fired? Or was it perhaps that he did exactly what he was supposed to do? Because there was a long-range plan to take us into World War III. And if you don't believe that, all you have to do is certainly go to the website, the Project for the New American Century, where they talk about how America is to have troops stationed throughout the world like the cavalry on the new American frontier. Like the cavalry on the new American frontier. Those are their words, not mine. And of course, how we can only have this come about if there is a catastrophic and catalytic event like another Pearl Harbor. That's page 51 of their treatise, their report, Rebuilding America's Defenses. It's available on their website, www.newamericancentury.org. And if you want the source of all the various quotations, get my newsletter, my March newsletter. It's available at my website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Or if you don't have access to the Internet, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we'll be glad to send you free of charge a copy of my March newsletter if you haven't had one before. Of course, we hope many of you out there will want to get it on a regular basis or even join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because we need to get this information out. And I think that where you're coming from in the political spectrum, I find many people on the far left are far more aware and concerned about what's going on than many of the conservative people who consider themselves patriotic and then blindly follow along with the lead and the leadership of the very people who created this whole problem. And I'm not suggesting that George Bush has any idea what this is all about, but I'm suggesting that the people who surround him do, because they, many of the key people there, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Jeb Bush, Paul Wolfowitz, John Bolton, and many of the others are all part of this project, The New American Century. Go to their website, look at who signed their publications, and you'll find that the people I've mentioned all came from there. And long before George Bush ever was elected president, they were already planning of what would happen when they took over the American government. Have you gotten into the project for the New American Century, Michael?
No, I haven't heard about that one, but on my own particular website, I've been collecting information, a lot of links to other websites, that you know, your audience needs to realize that everything that you're talking about is can be discovered in accepted works, even some of the print material and the literature from these organizations. You know, it's this is not something that's just fringe or crazy. This is stuff that can be definitely you know, cross-referenced. And there's many, many websites that are out there on a lot of the information that you're talking about. If people go to my links page on the website and look at the truth of September 11th, just, you know, click on that and go to that, those links, you'll find a lot of links there from the people that have been researching this in the last couple of years.
Well, I think it's so vitally important that the American people do not take anything at all for granted. And, you know, in fact, you can see things up on the web, and you always want to challenge them. I was reading today that the Primakov, the former head of the Soviet KGB, had been employed by the Office of Homeland Security. But when I tracked down the story, the people who had written it, well, they'd got it from somebody else. But those somebody else that they got it from, I don't trust. And I've had them on my radio program. I just have that feeling, well, where is the documentation from a legitimate source? Now, when, of course, an organization like the Project for the New American Century puts up their own website and says, this is what we're planning, you know, we want the American forces stationed throughout the world like the cavalry on the new American frontier, those are their words, not mine. But you got to take everything on the web with a grain of salt and then do the research. And when you find out it's true, then, of course, you can put it out. But one of the big problems we all have is that occasionally we'll get trapped by somebody who picked up something that wasn't true. And they're actually planting disinformation there to confuse people. And so it's up to you to find the truth. Find out who you can depend on. And when you've got somebody you can depend on, and I have people that I know are not going to put it up unless they've got the original documentation, then I will use that. And so we try to be as scrupulous as we can with the information we have. And I'm sure you do as well, Michael.
Well, yes, yeah. There's a great book that I recommend called The Unseen Hand by Ralph Apperson.
Yes, Ralph's a personal friend.
He is a wonderful writer. He has a very strong Christian message. You know, there is Tex Mars, and then there's, you know, Jim Mars. These are all friends of mine. So it doesn't matter. To me, it's of completely no importance what kind of, you know, denomination or religion a person comes from, because all over the world, these secret societies have been moving. All over the world, their subversion and their persuasion has been used. When you see these negative, what I actually do call satanic symbols on the billboards, on the products, they're not just coded only for Christians, right? Or they're not coded only for one demographic. They're not just coded for Mexican-Americans who happen to look at it. When you're walking in the Safeway, or when you're buying cars, or when you're buying T-shirts for your kids, or you're, you know, down at Macy's shopping, or whatever, you are, it doesn't matter who you are, your brain, right, the brain is going to be invaded by this information, and that's what I'm talking about. I am not talking about weaponry that is being used that is known to us. This is very subtle. This is a form of persuasion. They bypass all of your filters. The symbolism that is being used in our society today is not being done at your permission. Nobody came and asked you. Your space, your life space, is being crowded with stimuli, with colors, numbers, symbols, logos that are not good for you, that they are pernicious. And they are creating a very, a lot of the dysfunctions, a lot of the eating disorders, a lot of the criminal disorders, a lot of the existential angst that children are feeling today, for instance. You know, the delinquency that we see on every corner, I actually believe it comes from the subliminal persuasion of the occult use of sacred symbolism. I mean that correctly, sacred symbolism. The symbolism that you see is not negative itself. No symbol is negative itself. It's just a symbol, right? But it's who's using it and what for. And if a sacred symbol has been known for thousands upon thousands of years to be very sacred, to have been used by ancient religions, But then you have some, you know, Madison Avenue people using that to do what? To take your spirit to light? No, to sell you some toothpaste to keep you down in the lower energies of your appetite body. Well, that's not very religious, is it? So my work then tries to show, here are these sacred symbols. Let's look at their meanings. And the word occult just means hidden. That's all the word means. Let's look at the hidden meanings of these words. Let's look at what they do. Let's look at how they choose their strange names. How many of these .com companies also have names that mean nothing in English? This is a particular thesis that has not been addressed properly. Jordan Maxwell is the expert on it, and he has been the one to draw attention to this, that these logos and words come out of the ancient world, and they're being used today for a purpose. And we have them all over the place, and they're having a negative effect. It constitutes a psychic dictatorship in our midst. So when you see our kids walking around in a completely, you know, zombified state, and they don't know what on earth is wrong with them, and we don't know what's wrong with them, well, there may be a reason. And it's not what they know. It's something that, you know, they could be wearing it on a T-shirt. They could be buying it. They could be sworn to some kind of an allegiance that they're not even aware of. This is how the Satan works. This is how the Satan works, by using symbolism that you don't consciously know what it means. It works behind the rational faculty. But, you know, I've worked on this and being very, very proud to be able to present this at the ConspiracyCon this year, because Brian Hall believes, as I do, that this is a missing piece of the conspiracy that hasn't been gone into, because there are many forms of weaponry that the adversary uses, many forms, not just guns to the head and documents and papers and tanks and guns. There's other kinds, much, much more subtle. So the whole edict in the Bible of know thine enemy, this is what it's about. And, you know, I am a very nonpartisan person. I don't preach a particular, you know, slant on this. It's for everyone to take a piece of this at their own liberty and use it. The information that I give is, you know, free to be used by people of light to say, hey, you know, I understand this because this is going on in my community, or this is what's going on over here, you know, and I'm not going to support this anymore. I'm not going to spend my money on these corporations that use these, you know, negative secret society or even satanic logos. Because Gateway, you were talking about 666, the old Gateway Computers logo was three sixes intertwined. You'll find that symbol on lots of places. Nowadays, the Gateway people are using a Masonic cube. So we go into, I will show people in my slideshow what all the famous Masonic symbols are so that they can spot them. I will show what the astrological symbols are that the franchises are using. We'll go into all of this so that your next drive down Main Street is going to be a very educating experience. And the logos that you see on cars, you're going to find out where they come from, how they were designed, what they mean. And it's a most interesting, you know, concept to find out what these names mean, because over 70% of the products that we buy, like Nissan, Sentra, you know, Mazda, Lexus, so many, if you just start listing them, you'll find that they don't mean anything in English. And therefore, that is why designers use them, because then they bypass your rational faculty. If something doesn't mean anything in English, or it's a word or a term that's been turned around, you know, or it's made into an anagram, then it bypasses your conscious matrix, and it goes into your being. And when we're born and we're exposed to this on television, or children are exposed to it, it's going to mess up your libido. It's going to mess up your conscious volition. It's going to interfere with your willpower. And that is why so many of the disorders that exist in our world today, so many of even the criminal proclivities that we're seeing, so many people about, remember in the old days they used to say, I'm hearing voices? Well, this all connects. The whole concept of possession is not as far removed, it's not so way out there as we would imagine. There is a form of sorcery going on in our world right now, every day.
Well, you know, I think, Michael, when you tell people that, they're going to look at you as if, well, this couldn't be true. But there is such a blindness. There is really a spiritual blindness of the American people today.
They do not, and
this has been programmed into their very being. And I know I was a victim of this at one time. And I just happened to turn on the wrong television program one night. I was about 32 years of age, at 33 years of age. And for the first time, I began to think and began to question. And what we have to do, and you know, so many people call me all the time, and they say, you know, I keep trying to tell people what's going on, and they don't want to hear. They get angry with me. They don't believe me. And I said, look, don't tell them what's going on. Ask them questions. try to get them to think. That's the way you're going to be able to reach people, not by grabbing them by the coat collar and shaking them, because something has happened to their mind. There really is this blindness, this inability to think and see reality as it really is. And most people, I like to use the analogy of the Truman Show, the program with Jack Carrier movie. I don't like to recommend movies, but that was really an excellent, excellent movie, because here was a young man raised in an idyllic community. Every house had a white picket fence, and the girls were all so pretty, and the fellows were all so handsome, and everybody got along so well. And of course, Truman was, he was married to this wonderful girl, and he had all these wonderful friends, and except he noticed that whenever his wife gave him his cereal in the morning, she'd hold up the box and give a little spiel as if it were a commercial.
Right.
And you know, but this didn't bother him too much. And then he noticed whenever he was with his friends, they would always push him in front of a sign, so he was well-centered in front of this sign when they were talking to him, and the sign would be advertising some sort of a product. And then somebody came to him one day and said, "Don't you know that this is a television set and you're the star of the Truman Show?" Did you ever see that movie?
Yes, Peter Weir. He's one of my favorite directors. And if the people who, you know, who would balk at the fact that there is any kind of, what you would call it, secret government, or one of the organizations that you mentioned was the Illuminati, who are tied in with the Fabian Society. Remember, you were mentioning Barbara Marx Hubbard?
Right.
They're from a group called the Fabian Society, who are very instrumental in purveying a lot of this philosophy. And their founder was a man called Sidney Webb, and I have a quote from him. So just in case your viewers think we're just sitting here making this up, here's his quote. It says, "To play those millions of minds, to watch them slowly respond to an unseen stimulus, to guide their aspirations without their knowledge, all this, whether in high capacities or in humble, is a big and endless game of chess of ever extraordinary excitement."
Well, you know, it's so interesting. You can go back. I have a 1913 set of the British Encyclopedia Britannica, and there's a rather extensive write-up on the Illuminati. But you go to the modern British Encyclopedia Britannica, and you look up the Illuminati, and of course there's just maybe a one sentence or two sentences about it. And the detailed information on the Illuminati has simply been put down the memory hole so people won't know it's there. For one of the best treatises on the Illuminati, modern day, is written by James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, in his book, Fire in the Minds of Men. And, of course, we actually have some material we got from James H. Billington's office. It came from the Jeffersonian collection. It was written in 1903, and it's a treatise on the Jeffersonian, pardon me, it was written in 1803, a treatise on the Clintonian Illuminati, which was here in the United States at that time.
Right.
And the fact that most people have never even heard of the Illuminati simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think.
I'm very impressed that you know of James Billington's work, because just like Carol Quigley, he was an extremely senior academic personage. We're talking about reference works of people, for instance, of Gary Allen, the senator, Lyndon LaRouche. We're not talking about just, you know, some fringe cult hippie kind of knowledge that has come out of the, you know, the 60s subculture here. We're talking about accepted reference works of people of great knowledge. In fact, I'll read you another quote, and then, you know, let's try and ask the guests, your listeners, to imagine who wrote this. It says, "Some of the biggest men in the United States in the field of commerce and manufacture are afraid of somebody, are afraid of something. They know there is a power somewhere so organized, so subtle, so watchful, so interlocked, so complete, so pervasive, that they had better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it." That's a quote from your own president, Woodrow Wilson.
From the book, The New Freedom, you'll find that. And for you, ladies and gentlemen, that actually that was published in, I think, 1912, but it was a culmination, 1913, it was a culmination of the speeches he gave when he was running for president. And, of course, he recognized that there's always been this force working behind the scenes. And, of course, if any of you would like the pages from the book, I bought it, and since it was printed in 1913, I can copy that and give that to you if you really would like the pages to read them yourself, to see that they're, you know, and to show it to others. And of course, the idea that the president recognized there was this invisible force in our country at that time. And you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like that quote, like the pages from Woodrow Wilson's book, The New Freedom, the quotation that Michael just gave us. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there, if you have a question, a comment, you agree, you disagree, this is, of course, what talk radio is all about as we try to bring you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, and the realization that there are spiritual forces out there that really and very powerful forces that are influencing every aspect of our life today and certainly influencing what the American people think and believe. Now, why don't we get a little bit into your view of the Atlantis? If you've written a whole book on it, why you probably have done a great deal of research into this idea. And do you see America today as the new Atlantis?
Yes, I've always seen that. I started my researches in this, in Belfast when I was 13. And the quote that you just mentioned from Woodrow Wilson, I have many, insider quotes in the book, because it's not just about Atlantis. I work it from the time of Atlantis, but we go up to the modern age and talk about how the secret government, what its real origins are. And this was given to me by, the spiritual force. I mean, I'm doing a work that I consider to be motivated by spirits because, obviously you must know, Stan, that there isn't much other kind of motivation that you want to do this kind of work for other than something, you either have to be crazy or you... or you have to be, motivated by something a little bit more ethereal than any kind of motive that the world would want to hand you, because, as you know, you come up against every kind of bastion of orthodoxy that could possibly be out there. But that's just my nature, because on my father's side, who's Irish, all we had was rebels, and on my Indian side, on my mother's side, all we had was mystics. So that combination is not very good, you see, because then it creates, people like myself who just don't take no for an answer, and want to know all sorts of, details about things that you're just told to shut up and not to bother with. And unfortunately, I just keep on, wanting to bow down.
Now, was your mother an Indian from India? Or from
from the Himalayas.
All right, fine. Of course, many of these people were, their tradition was into the study of these various forces.
And especially into Atlantis, of course, they have a lot to say. And so these two, particularly the fusion of these two groups, so my mother and my father, the two bloodlines was remarkable in itself as a whole story you could tell about that. But growing up in the streets of Ireland, you are kind of faced with something that is very, very tyrannical. And you see the manipulation there because it's a small place. Here in America, we're dealing with a continent here. So when you talk about people in America, sort of not being as awake as they could be, there's also demographic reasons for that. There's also topographical reasons for that. The country is so voluminous. It's so huge. In Ireland and in Europe, you see our countries are smaller. The tyrants that we have in the positions of power, they don't last as long as they do here. The particular, people in government there, they can get away with certain things. There's only so many secretaries they can molest, and there's only so many deals that they can do before the media get onto them, and then we usually drag them out of power. But unfortunately in America, the White House is just this little dot far, far away. And as Jordan Maxwell says, in the early days of democracy, that's where you sent the person that represented you, the person that the village liked the least. You put him on a horse and said, go and represent us in Washington, D.C., because you wanted to get rid of the guy. Now we're living in the information age, so the whole principle of democracy can change, as it is in New Zealand, where people, voting by way of the Internet. My studies of Atlantis and Ireland were private, personal, connected to my spiritual, my spiritual interests, but they were also then based on the fact of what I was seeing in the streets. And some little voice in my head always said, Michael, there is a reason for this. There's a reason for the graffiti. There is a reason for the gangs. There is a reason for the injustices that you hear about. And you're meant to study that because it's not the reasons that are given in the newspapers or by any of the people that you normally come into contact with, unfortunately. It's a different agenda. I just heard that little voice, and I pursued it with great diligence. And came across the people that, I would consider my mentors. But to do that, I had to come through the Fabian Society. I had to come through even the Communist Party. Let me make no mistake about it. I was affiliated with a lot of these groups first. I know them personally. I know their agenda. I've been affiliated with people in the leading echelons of the IRA in Ireland and the UDA, all the different groups that we've grown up amongst. I had the ability to be able to sample what they had to say, you know, from beginning to end. Because of the role of my father and many other people that I was affiliated with, I had a crash course in all of these sundry different cabals and groups and what have you. And I started to smell a rat, you know, that sure, on paper, they all look like they're opponents of one another. Sure, on paper, they're all pointing in different directions, right? But as I started to study it more, I started to realize that they're all of the same, you know, group. They seem to be very similar in many ways. The communism and capitalism are not quite so far apart as one might want to imagine.
Yeah, that is such an astute observation, because the average individual believes that, you know, you have communism on one side and capitalism on the other. But if you look at it very carefully, there's no theoretical communism in Russia, or what you have is a ruling elite that controls the masses. You have a powerful and very wealthy elite who, because, of course, they have access to all the money of the state. So basically what you have is a feudalistic system of ruling class, and then, of course, everybody else enslaved by the powerful military and police. And that was exactly what Plato wrote about in the Republic, and that is exactly what we're moving rapidly towards here in America, as we export our jobs, impoverish the middle class, and soon we will have a ruling class here. We will have a police state. Of course, it's being set up at Patriot 1 and Patriot 2 under the name of fighting those wicked terrorists who we financed from the very inception. And then, of course, now, of course, we'll see the convergence of communism and so-called capitalism into the one world ruling system. This is my theory of what's happening today.
And you're perfectly right. And this whole thing that I keep hearing, this effort, you know, this euphemism that's always bandied around about the intelligence community, how these different government agencies consider themselves intelligence community. Well, you know, it's like I've got news for them. They're neither intelligent, nor are they a community. The real intelligence community is you and me, Stan, and your listening audience out there, and the people of America using their intelligence. We are the intelligence community. Knowledge has been buried. But there are websites, there are libraries, there are, you know, like people like yourself in the show, there's Conspiracy Con. There is always going to be the freedom researchers who are talking. We are moving towards a police state. If you read Patriot Act 2, and if you get into Alex Jones's website, the Infowars.com, that's Infowars.com, and go to the page about the Patriot Act 2, he will talk you through that. He did a fantastic article also in Media Bypass magazine. This is one of the last free magazines that actually exists in this country. Other than the American Free Press .com, but American Free Press is very good. That's the old Spotlight magazine, and then also is the Media Bypass, and the information is on my website. But if you go to Alex Jones Infowars.com and go into Patriot Act 2, he will talk you through this amazing document that is being put before the congressman now. And I will predict, and I don't have to be an astrologer to do this. I will, you know what I mean. I will predict for you now that if too many people resist Patriot Act 2, because practically nobody resisted, you know, Patriot Act 1, to the great shame of this country, because I told you what the scene was like in Ireland when people were trying to, you know, I cannot understand the complicity of the people in this country. I just cannot personally understand it. It's always been a particular point of interest for me as why people here take it. And, of course, now I've understood that it's a lot of the manipulation that I'll be talking about at the conference about subliminal art and just the pervasiveness of these satanic symbols is part of this piece. But I have a prediction to make, and that is this. If some of the senators and the congressmen and the governors resist the Patriot Act 2, which seems to be the case, then I predict that there will be another atrocity on the shores of America, because they set up the first one. You can forget about Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden or any of these people being involved in the terrorist attacks, because that is one of the biggest lies that even Adolf Hitler couldn't have cooked up with all of his propaganda experts. That was, you know, created here. And there's going to be another one. And it will only come if there is a resistance to Patriot Act 2. And there is resistance. I've been monitoring this quite closely. A lot of the governors, senators, and congressmen, they're like going, what on earth is going on with the federal government?
Will you hang that thought? Just hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And our guest this evening is Michael Tesarian. And, of course, if you'd like to give us a call, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Michael is saying that he thinks that if there is a resistance to Patriot Act 2, they'll create another crisis. If anybody doubts that the government knew the anthrax attack was coming, let me point out that on the very evening of September 11th, 2001, why Vice President Dick Cheney and the White House staff and the president were all started on Cipro. Now, the last thing in my mind and the mind of the average citizen on September 11th was the danger of an anthrax attack. But obviously, Dick Cheney, the vice president, and his staff must have suspected or must have known the anthrax attack was coming because, of course, you don't take Cipro. Cipro is a very dangerous product. It weakens your collagen tissues. You get rupture of your various tendons, your Achilles tendon, things of that sort. So you don't take a six-week course of that very lightly. And yet they started on a six-week course that very evening, fully almost 3 weeks before the first anthrax letter was received. So obviously they knew it was coming, or they suspected it was coming. All the evidence suggests it came from our own supplies, and the FBI is not being allowed to solve this crime, and the question is why. Would it be possible that they would somebody would use that anthrax attack and the attack on a couple of our United States senators to intimidate the Congress and stampede them into voting for the Patriot One Act without even most of them even having the opportunity to read it? Could that really have happened in America? Well, I will tell you, according to Congressman Ron Paul, it did happen in America. And the people so frightened, these people who, spineless individuals, voted for the Patriot Act because who could be against patriotism? And yet, of course, that act was certainly by far the most unpatriotic thing I've ever seen, repealing in large part the protections of the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution and massively expanding government ability to control and monitor the citizens of this country. So I'm very interested in your comments on Patriot 2, and I think we're going to have to be talking about that more and more. Do you know anybody who does a good job discussing that, Michael?
Many people. I would say that Alex Jones is very hot on this. I really liked his CD that came out called Road to Tyranny. It's probably one of the best documents of the 911 incident.
Oh, you're talking about his video.
The video, right. And also on Patriot Act 2 on his website. Or if people contact me by email, I will certainly forward them the information that I have. I would also recommend Media Bypass magazine, especially the one that just came out, you know, in the last month. Media Bypass.
No, is that posted on their website? Do you recall that article?
Their phone number is on my website. They do not have a website yet, but if you get into my website, go to the links page there and scroll down, you'll see their phone number. They have a 1-800 number, and I recommend everyone to get that magazine because it has some fine essays in it. And I absolutely will go forward and say that, as you know, there was no second terrorist attack after the 9/11 because they didn't need one. Everything fell into line, just like sheep falling into line. So, but you can better believe that they always hold the sword of Damocles. They always have the cattle prod over us. And, of course, they know that the herd mentality is very strong, that people did do what they were told after 9/11, and there was panic in the streets and everything else. I might add that even though there's an emergency going on in the state of, in the nation of America, I didn't see anybody not having to pay their taxes anymore. I didn't see anybody getting any other kinds of breaks. Did you ever notice the federal government grinding to a halt? No. Everything from their point of view continues as normal, but everybody else is in chaos. Well, there's going to be even more chaos orchestrated. I don't know what it will be, of course, but it's on the cards for America astrologically, and it's on the cards politically because they are not going to tolerate these individuals. And if you listen to the egotism with which these people talk about themselves and their work, you'll soon find out that they're not going to tolerate resistance to Patriot Act 2. There's a lot of resistance being given towards it, but they're not going to tolerate it. The Bush family and the people behind him are not going to tolerate any resistance because they've already gone so far down this road, you see. So, and I've lived under martial law in Ireland myself, so, you know, I just can't overstate that things could get very dark. I hope that they won't, but they could. And I also have a great faith in the American people because I don't believe that they can be pushed that far. One thing that I don't want to be, you know, purveying, and I don't want to be hearing from people, is fear. Because fear is the mind killer. Fear is the... fear opens the door to the adversary, as opposed to the light, as opposed to God's energy, right? I don't want to be hearing fear. I want to be hearing strength. The strength I've seen from the women and men in my own country, I want to see it from the people here in America. I want to see them absolutely knowing that this tyranny is going to be ended. That you're not going to have the governments ruling the show like they are now. That you're not weak. You're not disempowered. That you have a lot of ability. That you have a lot of intelligence. And that you know how to run your own country. You know how to, you know, do what is right. Because the American people, just about 200 years ago, which is a blink in the eye of history, they were being pushed as well. And some of them without shoes, some of them without gunpowder, some of them without bullets. They rose up and they threw the greatest dictator the world had ever known up until that time, King George III, into the ocean. And it can be done again. This Illuminati, these Knights Templars, they have crept in again. They've crept into your government. They rule us by way of the Federal Reserve and the national debt. Your Roosevelt put your country into deficit, into Chapter 11. And there's many ways of looking at this. But the fact of the matter is, the American people can only be pushed so far. So what they do is they push very gradually. A lot of the freedoms that have been taken away, and when I say freedom, I mean liberties. You've actually never had freedom at all. If you listen to Jordan Maxwell's talk at Conspiracy Con, he may go into this. The difference between the concepts of liberty and freedom are very important legally. So you may have had liberty, but you've never had freedom here. Freedom is not something that's ever given to you, Stan. Freedom is something we earn, we take, because it's not given by the rulers. Like you talk about Plato and the oligarchies and the plutocracies. That's right. These plutocratic, tyrannical overlords don't give anybody freedom. What they do is they give you a job, they give you a little money, and they say, you get in line, and, you know, maybe we'll give you some privileges, but you don't have any rights. Well, it's time for the American people to wake up and say, well, that's not good enough. That is not the plan of the Founding Fathers. That is not the plan of the Divine Force. That is not the plan of sovereignty. We are sovereign souls, sovereign spiritual entities living on this planet, and we are sovereign nation. Every state needs to wake up to that. You need to vote only the people who are sworn to that, and you need to get rid of these tyrants in the White House and on Capitol Hill and that have been ruling this country for too long. And I believe that they are very, very afraid. Let me make this absolutely clear. These people are afraid of the American people because we are many and they are few. And if we rise up with spirit and back the right people and forget some of our little partisan divisions down here that have been manufactured by them in the first place, let me add, then we'll be okay, because this is an old conspiracy. I mean, Sir Thomas Moore, back in the time of Henry VIII, he is on the record as saying, everywhere do I perceive a certain conspiracy of rich men seeking their own advantage under the name and pretext of the Commonwealth. This is the 14th century. Then you have Woodrow Wilson. You have Father Coughlin. You have Charles Lindbergh Sr., right? The list goes on of the people in this country who have stood up, even in the houses of government, and said, enough is enough. And that's what's going to happen now. And so I don't care if, I hope that there's not going to be another devastating attack. I wish to God that there hadn't been the 9/11. But if that is what it was going to take to wake up the people of America, like my country had to be waken up by soldiers in the streets and the almost unbelievable abuses of men and women being shot down in front of their children in their own bedrooms. This is the world that I come from. And the kneecappings and the beatings and the punishments that is going on in the rest of the world. I didn't want to see that. But if that is what it's going to take to get the people to seize their rights and understand what it means to be under God, we the people, then unfortunately that's going to be the way of it. I've already come from a country that, you know, we're not fighting for homes and houses and money and jobs and riches. We're fighting for principles, the principle of freedom, because that is absolutely fundamental. You can't have spirituality. You can't have an allegiance with God unless you're free. Free economically, free politically, free materially, and free from a constitutional point of view. It's simply the two just don't go together. How can you have freedom spiritually if you are enslaved, if you're indentured slaves materially? The two are just completely misnomers. They do not connect. So I believe that one of the highest spiritual principles is to free yourself and free your neighbor from all tyranny that exists. Walt Whitman, one of your greatest poets, thought the same thing. Martin Luther King thought the same thing. Albert Einstein thought the same thing. And the people of America need to start thinking the same thing. You have the power.
Well, of course, Martin Luther King paid for his principles with his life. And of course, they killed him, as I believe they killed the Bobby Kennedy and John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And of course, it's amazing how they were able to get the American people to think, oh, it was just this lone nut. He killed a lone nut named Lee Harvey Oswald, killed President Kennedy. Lone nut I've forgotten what his name was. Saran killed Bobby Kennedy. Lone nut named James Earl Ray killed Martin Luther King. And of course, if you go to the website of Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, he'll put you in touch with areas where actually there was two special forces teams there. And of course, if the assassin had missed Martin Luther King, they were to kill Martin Luther King themselves. These were USA special forces units. So,
well, John F. Kennedy was killed very, very shortly after he made this quote that I'm going to read. You've probably read it to your audience before, but for those who haven't heard it, it's fascinating. It says, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, the secret oaths, and the secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighs the dangers which are cited to justify it. John F. Kennedy, April 27, 1961. This man was aware, you see, as we are aware today. Has any facts been given about 9-1-1? The FBI have always been saying, well, we're going to give you the facts, and we've got all the files sequestered here. But nobody, they've put thousands upon thousands of people to work to find the culprits, right? Within a few hours, they had a so-called manufactured list of the hijackers. But now, you know, a year has gone by, thousands of employees, but they have no victims. They have never been able to really arrest anyone. They still can't find this Osama bin Laden and everything else. So what is going on here? Then we have a senator, I have a quote in my book from Senator Daniel Inouye, who says, this is a senator from your own country. He says, there exists a shadowy government with its own air force, its own navy, its own fundraising mechanism, and the ability to pursue its own ideas of the national interest, free from all checks and balances, and free from the law itself. Now, that is what we're seeing right now. And you know, this is something that the American people need to wake up for. There are many people in senior positions of government who are trying to do something about it, but what can they do without people waking up and helping them?
Well, of course, what we have to do, and that's why I do what I do 5 hours a day, is to try to make people understand what is at stake and that they must be involved in this, and they must learn how to reach others, because we don't have the money to buy major television, but we do have the ability to reach one person at a time, and then the people that we reach can reach others, who can reach others, and that's what they really fear, and that really is going on across America. As we try to get people to think, and every person who does suddenly begin to think can then begin to reach others.
It doesn't take much thinking, you see, to understand that there's a big difference in character between somebody, for instance, like George Bush, whether it's the older one or the younger one, or even Clinton for that matter, in character and reputation, and compare that to somebody like Lieutenant Colonel James Bo Greitz, for instance. James Bo Greitz has 64 citations for valor, all of them in the field. You know, he's one of the most highly decorated Green Berets in the world. In America's history, here is a Christian man running for president who could solve many of America's problems. But does anybody vote for him? No, he's not got enough votes because the people don't understand, you know, what are the differences. There are actually people out there worth voting for, but, you know, again, we vote for the same old, clan.
No, it's so interesting. You know, the Democrats are talking about maybe General Wesley Clark. Maybe we could run him for the president. I mean, he's a general. He was involved in one of the, I think it was probably Kosovo. I wonder how many people out there, when we mention the name Wesley Clark, would realize he comes from the Council on Foreign Relations.
Sure.
He's a Rhodes Scholar. What do the Rhodes Scholars have to do with it? Everything.
Everything.
Of course, Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar.
You bet.
In fact, you know, the Rhodes Scholars are into every aspect of our society, and they, young, capable, intelligent men, sent to Oxford, financed by the Rhodes Scholarships, of course, which are financed by De Beers Diamonds, goes back to the time of Cecil John Rhodes and his dream of creating a ruling elite that would run the world and creating a secret society. He created a secret society and the Rhodes Scholarships, two parallel organizations. And of course, the secret society that he created became the Council on Foreign Relations. And that's covered on pages 951 and 952 of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And then, of course, if you read the books about the Rhodes Scholarships, you'll find that when these young people come back to the United States, what do they do? Why they join the Council on Foreign Relations. And that's covered in a book called The Vision of Cecil Rhodes, written in 1940 by Frank Adiolette, who was in charge of the Rhodes Scholarship nominations from the United States. So you begin to see how all the little parts of the puzzle fit together, how you begin to connect the dots, and you begin to understand that there are these people behind the scenes want a ruling elite. And of course, the fact that the Democrats now would be talking about nominating another Rhodes Scholar, the last one, of course, was Bill Clinton, who became the president, but we've had Rhodes Scholars who spent all sorts of important positions, and of course, the relationships between the Rhodes Scholarships and the Skull and Bones and the Council on Foreign Relations,
well, they,
all of these fit together.
That's right. Your group that you just mentioned, the Rhodes Scholars, actually the Lord Cecils, the Cecil clan, are behind the Guinness clan, you know, that make all the alcohol.
Right.
That has destroyed how many millions of lives. And they go back to the Hellfire Club. This is a super satanic group of intellectuals that used to meet in England called the Hellfire Club. And, you know, their own documents will tell you that they were into global control. You have one of the finest, the first actually Jewish Prime Minister of England was called Benjamin Disraeli. He was the first president of England that was Jewish. And he spent his whole life trying to expose secret societies. One of his quotes is, and it's in my book on Atlantis, and he says that the government of this country has not only to deal with governments, kings, and ministers, but also with secret societies, elements which must be taken into account, which at the last moment can bring our plans to nothing, which have agents everywhere, who incite assassinations, and can, if necessary, lead a massacre. So we, the people of America, would do well to realize that these particular motions that you see on the news every night, the particular machinations that are coming down from the White House, they have an old historical paradigm, going back to the Rhodes Scholars, as you said, the Trilateral Commission, and many other more shady secret organizations that lie behind the United Nations. Behind the United Nations lies a group called the Lucius Trust, that used to be called the Lucifer Trust. These are bona fide, you know, Luciferian groups that exist behind, because they're not going to come out and be obviously purveying darkness, are they? They're going to hide behind, just like the mafia hides behind front organizations. So a lot of the organizations that we see in our society today, they're obviously not being run by ordinary rags to riches American people, are they? I mean, good, if anybody still believes that, I don't know what to tell them. These are not. These are, most of the franchises and the groups that you see working in the world today, they're part of the white market, but behind them is the black market run by the same old dynasties and the same old families that can be tracked all the way through New York City, back over to London, and back to even Venice if you go far enough. It's an old story. And Conspiracy Con, and on your show and other events, I am absolutely always feeling so happy when I see individuals come to these talks and other talks that I do, for instance. It just fills my heart because then I know that here are the few that will teach the many, you know. And I'd like to give my contact information if anyone...
You go right ahead.
It's my phone number right now is 223-3304. That's 650-223-3304. And the book is available by me. It's going to be in the bookstores soon, but right now, if you want any of my material, the best way to do it is direct.
Will you have your book over there at the Conspiracy Con?
Oh, yeah. We'll have it there, and it will be available in stores by that time. I've just written it, so, you know, it's a work that goes into a lot of different genres and covers a lot of time.
Well, let's get that telephone number one more time.
Sure. The book is called Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation, and it can be received by my number at 650-223-3304, or emailing me is really good because then I can get you a lot more information on it, which is NETER. That's N for Norman, E for Edward, T for Tom, E for Edward, R for Robert. NETER at JPS.net.
JKS?
JP, like John Paul Sartre.
JPS.com?
Dot net.
Dot net, okay.
Yeah.
That's N-E-T-F-R.
No, E-R.
E-R at JPS.net.
Yeah.
Okay. So, of course, our guest is Michael Tesserino.
Tesserian.
I'm
sorry. I will also be doing a talk. I'll be doing several other talks in the area, and my website has the events page there. But if anybody contacts me, I'll be happy to tell them where those talks are going to be. There's two in Berkeley, one on May 6th at the New Age Academy in Berkeley, and one on May 31st at the Psychic Institute in Berkeley. And all the information is on my website on the calendar of events page, so people can always know where I am. I'm open to be invited to do my presentations anywhere that anyone wants to purvey this information. I used to live in Monterey, you know, in Carmel myself a few years back. I have a lot of friends there, and I've talked there at the Pilgrim's Way. Bookstore is a favorite haunt of mine. So, you know, there's I will go wherever there is the people who want to know the facts, the truth. Because this year and last year, we cannot be living by the same old paradigms. I mean, most Americans must realize that. They may not be open to knowing really what's going on, but I'm sure that even the average American knows that certainly the world prior to 9/11, you know, September 11th, is not the same as the one that we're living in now. There's too much heavy stuff coming down, and it's about time that we have a revelation in order to, you know, stop a revolution from taking place.
Well, I think for our listeners out there, if you'd like to know exactly what the plan is, why, of course, there was an interview on Nightline on the 5th of March, and, of course, after I've been pointed out for several weeks that, you know, they have not released this video. Well, after about 8 weeks or 7 weeks, they've suddenly released the video. So now you can buy it, but it'll take you another 4 weeks. But it's certainly Ted Koppel interviewing William Crystal, who's the director of the Project for the New American Century, and Bill Crystal lays it all out. We're going after Syria, we're going to destabilize or overthrow the government of Iran and of Saudi Arabia. We're not going to let the North Koreans become a bomb-making factory, and we'll do what we have to stop that. We're talking about world domination by a small group of people, but my fear is that all the best-laid plans of mice and men sometimes go astray, and I think what these people are going to do is push and push and push, and they're going to antagonize 1.25 billion people. They're going to antagonize the people of Europe. They're going to antagonize the people of the Middle East. They're going to antagonize the Russians and the Chinese, and I fear that there's going to be a blowback, a backlash, that will result in terrible, terrible, terrible devastation. That's not what they want necessarily, but I fear that this is what may well be what's going to happen.
Not unless the American people start proving that they really are a land of freedom. Because, you know, the power that exists in the average person scares the bejesus out of these Illuminati creatures. They fear. They really fear us. They fear mankind. They fear the strength of a person of spirit. Because these people are spineless, spiritless cowards that run the governments of the world. And the last thing that they can stand is a person of moral or spiritual convictions. And this country was based on that. It was based on being we the people under God. That is a very powerful edict. A lot of people don't understand it because, of course, we got the misfortune of having to go to schools where we're totally misinformed about all of this, where religion is thrown into the trash can, where you're considered a criminal even if you're going to say prayers. I believe I've heard in this country that is the going theme now. I may be wrong, but, you know, these kinds of things are against the Constitution of the United States of America. But behind the Constitution is the concept of sovereignty. The concept of sovereignty is not just a concept, you know, that was introduced in America. It is a sovereign right given by God. It is a sovereign right to all human beings to be of independence and to not just be sheep to be herded by any fascist set of dictators into anything. You don't need to be a Christian to believe this. It is just a simple fact of your humanity. You know, you have a privacy, and you have, are we private today? I don't think so. And if you have Patriot Act 1 and Patriot Act 2 passing, you can forget about any type of privacy. I will be talking, even at my talks, about some of the sophisticated technology that they have to be able to read your computer screen from, you know, miles away and do all sorts of things. There's a lot of interesting pieces that people need to know about that so they can make the right decisions. But I'm absolutely a believer that if you push the American people too far, they're going to regret it. And as I said to you, I don't want atrocities to happen. I certainly don't hope that they don't. But you see, there's already atrocities happening all over the world. These oligarchies have murdered 1 million Iraqi children. 92% of Iraqi women have anemia now. And the leukemia rates are unbelievable over there. The human rights abuses. So, you know, there's already these atrocities happening that make my blood boil. So, you know, what can I say? Something has to be done. And if people are not going to get it through the word, then they're going to get it through the weapon. They're going to get it through having to be motivated when it comes to their own shores. And
well, all we can do, of course, is right now try to inform people, try to educate people, and try to make them understand that they are going to have to become involved if they hope to remain free, if they're concerned about their family, their future, and, of course, their freedom. Because freedom is lost when good people do nothing.
Exactly.
And, of course, the evil people are organized. They hold the reins of power. They control the media. And all we have on our side is right and truth. And but, of course, if we can get enough Americans to understand what's happening and to understand that freedom has never been free, it has to be paid for in every generation by people who are willing to risk all to preserve that freedom, then, of course, it can be preserved for generations unborn. But if we falter at this time in history, then, of course, future generations will curse those who came before. And as Thomas Paine had said so well, these truly are the times that try men's souls. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners tonight, Michael?
Well, I would say to them, more than a parting thought, is that your best vote is with your dollars. And that is to get yourselves and your friends over to ConspiracyCon and events like that to support people like Stan Monteith, people like myself. When you buy a book or you buy a tape, buy two and give it to your neighbor, give it to your friend. Just take a chance. Just take a chance and, you know, disseminate this information. Make flyers, little blurbs of little pieces of information that you found. Don't just store it away in the back of your mind. You know, use it. Write it down and say, hey, I'll put this down at my local store. I can do it anonymously. Because I found out some facts, and it's awoken me. So then why don't I, you know, put this on a flyer or make up a little brochure or put it on a wall somewhere? That's all it takes. How much does it cost to buy, a bunch of tacks and go down to your local photocopy place and print up some of these wonderful quotes that you've been talking about, Stan, you know, or a passage from somebody else's book that has changed your life? The kind of changes that we're talking about are very, very small. You don't know if your governors even know anything about what we're discussing on this program. Why don't you inform them? Why don't you send them, you know, sheets of paper with these incredible quotes on it that maybe they don't even know? So that the people that you have got in government, in local government there, can end their ignorance and maybe start to look at history in an alternative way. I've taught alternative history my whole life. You know, everything that I do, from the book that I've done, the tapes that I've done, and the talks, we go into alternative history because my parting thought is this. History, to me, was actually, when it's taught in schools, one of the most boring subjects, and I'll bet you a lot of your listeners out there agree with me, that history, as taught in schools, is a very, very boring subject. But you know something? The good news is the study of how history has been manipulated, the study of how history has been contorted, is one of the most fascinating of all subjects.
We're out of time. God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us, Michael.
Thank
we look
you
forward
so much.
To having you on again and seeing you there at the Conspiracy Conference.
Well, a big hug for you when I see you. I will give you for this, this moment of sharing with your audience. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.